kiss your lips a thousand times, and more times than I can count. I have called you mine, you have stood by me in my
life. From New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you to this program. It's going to be an empowering hour. As always, we begin with the latest on health and healing. We're going to talk about how scientists have identified a key factor in the relationship between diet, good and bad, and inflammation and cancer from the Children's Hospital Oakland Research Institute, and Breathe Easier, Get Your Vitamin D from Tel Aviv University, and millions of antibiotic prescriptions for kids are not needed, University of Washington, and a key antioxidant and trace mineral compounds that improve blood sugar stability. We have nearly 100 million Americans with problems with metabolic syndrome, diabetes, prediabetes. This will really help them. So I'll give you all the details on that. And also, there is a Chinese herb that regrows hair by halting cell suicide. So we'll share that with you as well. And that was in the American Journal of Chinese Medicine, and a lot more. Then today, from our environmental segment, we're going to talk about California, the Golden State. Not in a good situation out there. It's going to get worse. How Roundup and birth defects were known and kept in the dark for decades. The science of them actually causing birth defects. But the United States and European Union decided it would not be in the interest of the public to know that a chemical sprayed on their food was causing birth defects. Why? Who was behind it? We'll name the names. Powerful lobbies versus public interest. From Lawrence Davison, Consortium News. Some American lobbies are so powerful that U.S. politicians cringe in fear, knowing that standing up for the broader national interest would be a career-threatening situation. A reality most notable on issues on a lot of topics. We'll deal with that. My guest in the second part of our program, Greg Palast. And also, we're going to have a person talk about a condition they had that was very serious, life-challenging, and was put onto a holistic protocol, and today is completely healthy, from wheelchair to health, and how he did it. All this week, we've been having people on who've reversed end-stage cancer, and you've heard them in their own, uncoached, non-rehearsed, talk about their journey back to health using my protocols that have been given with by Lou Anne Panessi, and we'll get to those people. Also, I'm going to have on from a very important topic, and that is pink washing. You may not have heard of pink washing. You will today when Karuna Jagger from the Breast Cancer Action talks with Abby Martin on Russian TV about how pink washing is creating more cancer. You've seen all the football players wearing pink. You've seen the marches just one a few weeks ago here in New York City. Millions of people worldwide marching for a cure. But it's all fraud. And we'll tell you what's behind it. And I'll also share some information of what we can do about it. Let's begin. This is from Children's Hospital, Oakland Research Institute. A team of researchers in the Laboratory for Pediatric Cancer Research found that a category of lipids, those are fats, known as phingolipids, are important in the relationship between good diet, bad diet, inflammation, and cancer. In a paper published online this week in the Journal of Clinical Investigations, Dr. Saba, an MD, PhD, and her team found how all this comes together. Now, it's very complicated, the science of it, but in lay language it means this, that there is a definite association between contributing to inflammation of the colon, an inflammatory bowel disease, and inflammation-associated colon cancer. When you have, let's say, a meat-based diet, but soy and plant-type chemicals, and these are the shingledienes, can protect against these conditions. So what it's saying is that a plant-based diet can help the cell to prevent cancer and turn off inflammation. An animal-based diet can cause cancer. So pay attention to what you're eating. And again, non-GMO, organic, lots of juices. And this did not even include people who were taking juices. If I had someone in front of me I was counseling who had inflammatory bowel disorders, I'm going to be suggesting lots of cabbage juice, wheatgrass juice, chlorella, spirulina, the juices and the chemicals in those juices that are known to turn off inflammation. And that wasn't even in their studies. So just normal eating with vegetables is a good thing. Tel Aviv University did a study published in the peer-reviewed journal Allergy that showed that vitamin D is very important in helping people with asthma. Quote from the study, vitamin D has significant immunomodulatory effects and as such was believed to have an effect on asthma, an immunological mediated disease. But most of the existing data regarding vitamin D and asthma came from pediatric population and was inconsistent. Our study is unique because the study population of young adults is very large and uncontaminated by other diseases. So it was a very good study. And they examined 21,000 asthma patients and found that if you were low in vitamin D, you were 25% more likely than other asthmatics to have flare-ups. So that means that, quote, our results add more evidence to the link between vitamin D and asthma, suggesting beneficial effects of vitamin D on asthma exacerbations. That was according to Dr. Confino Cohen, and that's just good. Now, mind you, you can get vitamin D by being outside for about an hour and having some exposure on about one-third of your body, or you can take vitamin D supplements. Millions of antibiotic prescriptions for kids may be unnecessary, from Washington, University of Washington. Quote, pediatric researchers found that 11 million prescriptions for antibiotics in kids is unnecessary. Pediatricians prescribe antibiotics about twice as often as they actually needed for children with ear and throat infections. Well, okay. And that was published in the journal Pediatrics. Here's my take on this. First and foremost, giving a kid who may have some mucus, might have some swelling in the throat, they're not actually doing samples in most cases to see what type of bacteria or virus exist. Because you could have infections due to viruses, in which case the antibiotic is completely worthless and actually counterproductive because you're destroying good bacteria with the antibiotic. Many ear infections are due to the body's imbalance in its biochemistry due to the amount of vaccines taken and the adjuvants like aluminum or polysorbate 80, formaldehyde, DNA cells, all of which are in these various vaccines, and in the flu vaccine, mercury. That has been shown and proven to create immune-related conditions that end up with infections. We see that we can detoxify the body of the harmful effects of most of these, but for every time a kid has an ear infection or a throat infection, to give them the antibiotic is simply bad medicine. And also, for the parents out there who are reading the latest science, and I'm happy to see that there are hundreds of parents groups now, mainly because of parents having their own children vaccinated and then getting sick from the vaccines. And then all authorities, the doctor or the pharmacist or the school, saying, couldn't have been from the vaccines, they're safe and effective. Well, the science does not support that any given vaccine will be safe and effective for any given child. There is no such science. It does not exist. The science they do have, we have examined every one of their studies and found every single one, most of those studies coming from the vaccine makers, to be biased and poorly designed. And there is no gold standard study, meaning there's no group of children that received nothing, a placebo, and a group that got the vaccines, and then they were examined on a quarterly basis for 5 years to see the nature and outcome of the disease. So they have no gold standard. It's all marketing, it's all hype, and it's all the power of pharmacy and dollars to control public health policy. So, in any case, there's a lot of reasons kids are sick. If you were to give your child vitamin D, vitamin C, if you were to give them Padiarco and some of the natural remedies, most of the time you're able to help substantially or clear up completely inner ear infections. And homeopathic doctors, naturopathic doctors, and holistic medical doctors have been using garlic drops for a long time to clear up ear infections. There's a good study that examines what happens when we eat sugar or carbohydrates in our digestive system, how that converts these larger molecules into glucose, which is sugar, and then that's absorbed into the bloodstream, and your cells then use that as fuel. And if you have a stable blood sugar, you're healthier. You have more sustained energy. That's why in the mid-afternoon, when my blood sugar starts to go down a while, I'll take a handful of sunflower seeds and pumpkin seeds, maybe some walnuts or almonds, and eat them. That stabilizes the blood sugar. If I just had fruit, that would spike the blood sugar, not high, and then it would come down. So you want things that stabilize the blood sugar. Vegetables are great. They don't spike the blood sugar. So keeping an even blood sugar is good. And when blood sugar is elevated, the glucose molecules connect to protein enzymes in the body, producing sticky enzymes in a process called glycation. Gly, G-L-Y, cation, C-A-T-I-O-N. Now, these glycation products are named advanced glycolytic enzymes, or AGE, and they produce rampant amounts of oxidative stress, and that prematurely ages you. So we want something that can help maintain normal blood sugar. One of the things is chromium. And most Americans, over half the population, are deficient in chromium. We need it. And chromium deficiencies lead to diabetes and heart disease. Chromium helps to activate the glucose transporter molecule within the cell called the GLUT4. And that receptor is found most abundantly in skeletal muscles and fat tissue, where most glucose metabolism takes place. So chromium activates the GLUT4 and positions itself right on the surface of the cell membrane, where it's easily able to interact with insulin and glucose. Hence, you have good maintained sugar. Now, according to Natural News, chromium is one of the best, but also NAC, N-acetylcysteine, which is a precursor to glutathione, which is the body's primary antioxidant, neutralizes free radicals and detoxifies harmful substances. It's just terrific for you. It's in every cell in your body. It does a lot of good things, defends your cells, helps get a waste out of the body. That will also help in alpha-lipoic acid, alpha-lipoic, L-I-P-O-I-C, acid. It's unique because it works inside and outside the cell. It's both fat and water soluble. And it helps regenerate vitamin C, regenerates vitamin E, and other antioxidants like glutathione, coenzyme Q10. It protects your energy factories called the mitochondria. So if you want to have a more normal blood sugar, chromium, alpha-lipoic acid is terrific, and acetylcysteine. Now, for those of you who are having trouble with your hair, here's something good. This is a nutrient. It's a nutrient found in Chinese herb. It's called angelica sinensis. Well, the common name is dong quai, D-O-N-G, quai, Q-U-A-I. It's loaded with chemicals called phytonutrients, including the polysaccharides, the flavonoids, the ferulates, and phytosterols, and cumarins. These are all chemicals inside this herb. It is one of the most commonly used herbs in the world. There are two major herbs, ginseng and dong quai. And also, it's called Chinese angelica. And it's in this family of celery and parsley, carrots. And it's been studied at the University of Seoul in South Korea. They did a series of studies and found that it actually helps prevent hair loss. And that's an important thing. And it was published in the American Journal of Chinese Medicine. Quote, based on previous studies, we explored the hair growth effect and the mechanisms of the herb related to the regression of hair during catechin in mice. The 70% ethanol extract was applied topically at doses 1 to 100 mg/mL, and the group showed noticeable hair regrowth. Treatment with this restored the length of hair shaft and the size of hair follicles. Good. I'm quite sure that in the very near future we will see an extract of this coming on the market. Once this science comes out, a lot of people pay attention. Something that we do not talk about enough in our society, and we should, is the power of lobbyists. You've heard for some time that we challenge one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, lobbying group at the state level in America, and that is ALEKS, the American Legislative Exchange Council. They have been in existence for over 35 years. They represent about 300 major multinational corporations like McDonald's or Verizon. We were not aware that they actually wrote and sponsored and caused to be passed over 25,000 laws at the state level. I believe all those laws should be rescinded, and the lawmakers who supported them should be fired. Because they met in secret, they were given this information, they were given the actual bills, and we were of the belief that any bill that a legislator passes is based upon the needs of the constituents. That's all fraud. According to Consortium News and David Lawrence, powerful lobbies always went out against public interest. The problem of special interests or lobbies was one of the foremost concerns of the founding fathers of the United States. In their day, these pressure groups were called factions. James Madison, who is considered the architect of the U.S. Constitution, devoted the entire 10th Federalist Paper in 1787 to the problem. He defined a faction as a number of citizens, whether amounting to a majority or a minority, actuated by some common interest adverse to the aggregate interests of the community. That's what he said in his own words. And he believed that within the context of liberal republicanism, they could never be eliminated. However, Madison didn't feel they could be controlled completely, but they could be kept within boundaries. To this end, he sought to create representative bodies with high numbers of delegates and a wide diversity of interest in the hope that they would be counterbalancing each other. And when George Washington delivered his famous farewell address in 1796, he too noted the problem. Washington warned of, quote, combinations and associations, those are your lobbyists, of today, which attempt to, quote, direct, control, counteract, and all the regular deliberation and action of the constituted authorities, that's your Congress, and thereby substitute their own desires for the delegated will of the nation. We take what is ours, and you, the public, are left with nothing. As Washington's continued concern implied, James Madison's approach to controlling special interests or factions never proved adequate. Today, the problem is still with us and is worse than ever. That is why, in April 2011, Lawrence Davidson coined the word lobification to describe the corruptive process that bends politicians to the will of special interest, that is, to the will of lobbies. The vehicle that makes this process possible is, of course, money, usually in the form of campaign contributions to the politician. If the politician defies the lobby, making the offer, which is a rare event, but not unheard of, that special interest will throw its support to the defiant politician's electoral opponent. The result is that most politicians are in lockstep with the demands of multiple powerful special interests. James Madison believed that this corruptive process is a consequence of human nature, self-interest, and action. Perhaps that is so, but the results are no less debilitating. So Pavlovian are the responses created by lobification that today politicians in this state of mind cannot tell the difference between the parochial interest of those powerful factions in which they are indebted and the actual national or local interest of their county or country or community. Let me just share two examples. The two recent examples of powerful lobification. On July 18th of this past year, acting in response to the urgings of Zionist lobbyists, the U.S. Senate unanimously voted to support Israel's ongoing attack on the Gaza Strip. It was unanimous. Where was Bernie Sanders? Where were the people who should have spoken out, who call themselves independent? They certainly weren't on that day. This from a Congress known for its inability to agree on just about any legislative process important to its own country. So it sought to assure, to align itself with the interests of Israel, and it has not aligned itself with the interest of the average American. It has not, for example, voted to put a moratorium on home foreclosures, demanded the U.S. Attorney and the Justice Department investigate aggressively and bring the heads of the big banking companies to justice. Not one has been indicted or investigated. It has not demanded that there be a moratorium on any more gas hydrofracking or deep sea or native forest exploration for oil. It has done none of the things that we should be doing for America's public. The senators voted their support even though the Israeli action was of the same character as so many around the world, where we focus upon the aggressor as being our ally and therefore nothing they do will be challenged. Mind you, in the real world and the rest of the world, these were war crimes, and they cannot be justified as an act of self-defense. It might be noted here that there were serious divisions of opinion about Israeli behavior among the American public, that is, the Senate's constituency, but the senators seemed immune from the popular debate and responded as if they represented just the Zionist lobby, not the American public. On the domestic front, meaningful regulatory legislation has not been put into place time and again against predatory loans, payday loans, high interest rates, usurious interest rates, the jailing of people for being poor, the return in 27 states of debtors' prisons, 80,000 SWAT raids, many of them just to serve summonses or to collect debts. Last week, 26 fully armed SWAT team members raided a home of a 76-year-old man because he was late on a payment. And yet our Congress has nothing to say. That is the power of special interest. Whether it is ALEC at the local and state level or the major K Street lobbyists, most of whom come from Congress itself. They leave as legislators, as working in the White House, Defense Department, the National Security Agency, and go right in to these lobbying firms. It's a shame. Here is something for those who are concerned about the future. This is from a Harvard study. Quote, here is why the Chinese economy can't defy the odds forever. And it says, the announcement this week that China's economy had grown by 7.3% in the third quarter year on year was widely seen as marking the country's new normal of slower growth. It was well below the roughly 10% pace China had averaged from 1980 until 2 years ago. Yet according to a new working paper by Lant Pritchett and Larry Summers of Harvard University, it is still abnormal. Chinese growth is likely to be lower still in the future. Forecasters often extrapolate from recent growth rates, and the International Monetary Fund, for instance, projects that Chinese growth will slow almost imperceptibly over the next 5 years to about 6.5%. So what does this mean? Here is the chart. If you're watching, and you can watch the program by going to Ustream channel, that's U-S-T-R-E-A-M, Ustream channel, and go to Gary Noll, you'll see I'm holding a chart here. And it's relatively easy to see that the chart shows right here, it says a $46 trillion difference projected size of Chinese economy by 2023. All right, well, that's only, what, 8 years away. 8 years. And that's because our economy is growing at somewhere between 1% and 2%. Theirs was growing up to 2010 at 9.7%. But it means that we're going to have China overtake the United States and continue to grow and become the world's largest economy within the next 2 years, and then it will just break ahead of us tremendously. What does that mean, and why should you care? Well, what it means is that it will then have the power as the number one economy in the world, and also the number one importer of minerals from around the world, from silver and gold and titanium, to have enormous impact on the geopolitical landscape. They're holding $1.3 trillion of our debt, and they're going to get rid of that debt as quickly as they can, and then they're going to move into mixed currencies. When that happens, there will be an impact upon the dollar, its value, and that's going to cause interest rates in our country to rise. When it's known that the dollar is no longer the universal world currency of reserve, watch your interest rates rise. So, think of all the people who are struggling now. Think of the people that cannot afford current interest payments, and now imagine those interest payments going up substantially. So, that is why we got to pay attention to what's going around, happening in the world around us. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a break, come back, and we're going to take a look when we come back at a person who's made changes in their life and has made major progress because of those changes. Then we're going to hear from a woman who challenges the pink movement, that it's a fraud. And I'll give you a perspective on breast cancer that is not being talked about anywhere. There's no money going for the research, and yet it has the proof that it's working to prevent and or improve cancer. Stay with us.
Baby, oh, 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 oh.
like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to hear from someone who has made major improvements, Richard and his wife. And then we're going to hear a challenge to the whole commercialization of cancer and this whole phony buy pink, support pink, and what really will help with cancer. But that brings me to this brand new hardback book. You're seeing it for the first time today, right in my hand. It's a hardback book. It's called No More Cancer, A Complete Guide to Preventing and Treating and Overcoming Cancer. There's testimonials in here for people. There's every kind of therapy and what it actually does, which are the best therapies, from SEACT to Nicholas Gonzalez to, and then the people in each one, the homeopathic medicine cancer, person that reversed it, Marilyn on breast cancer and how she reversed it, Edmund on kidney cancer, Lynette on bone cancer, Henrietta on breast cancer with metastasis to the lung, Tom on skin melanoma, Joan on breast cancer. They're all in here. The therapies are in here. The recipes are in here. The science is in here. A look at the American Cancer Society, the unregulated poisons in our midst, the biphenyl A that I was reporting on years ago. Now it's finally caught on. BHA, coal tar dyes that are in our cosmetics and shampoos. The DEA and how it causes the parabens and the methylparabens and the butylparabens, and how the FDA is not helping. The poultry industry and how that can cause cancer when you're eating chicken and meat. And then how you build up your immune system, the real foods, the real nutrients, in-depth explanation of the herbs, genistein, aloe vera, astragalus, ginkgo, echinacea, garlic, what each one does, turmeric, ginger, theanine, lentinin, red clover, essiac, hoxies, herbal therapy, beriberine, feverfew, and what to avoid if you want to prevent cancer, if you have it. It's all here. All the therapies, the protocols, the foods, the juices, the detoxification. It's all in my new hardback book. First time mentioning it. No More Cancer. Now to go with that, it's 4.5 hours. 4.5 hours. Preventing and reversing cancer naturally. You'll see in here the real causes, the prevention, and the best of the best. The holistic oncologists. They're all in here. The body-mind connection to cancer. Richard Salazzo, board-certified physician and oncologist, Dr. Moshe Dekel, Dr. Michael Schachter, Dr. Raphael Kalman, Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, they're Henry Grayson, they're all in here talking about the natural way to approach cancer. So everyone that I work with, they watch this. And now they have the book to go with it, so it's a combination package. No More Cancer, the book, hardback book, and Preventing and Reversing Cancer Naturally, 4.5 hour DVD documentary series. The two together, just $49.95. Normally it'd be $85. So you're making you're having a big savings. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. We have 100 books that I bought from my publisher for this. So we got enough for 100 people. 877-627-5065. And this will go right out same day in the mail. No More Cancer, the hardback book, the definitive guide. If you don't have cancer, you should have the book so you know how not to get cancer. If you have cancer, you'll know the alternative approaches that work in the people making the statements and the doctors and the science to back it up. You're going to need this sooner or later in your life. Everyone is going to need to know this information. Everyone. So put time on your side in the right way. Do the right thing. Get the information so you can start making changes in yourself or others. Only $49.95 for both. 877-627-5065. Or you can come by our vitamin closet, 83rd and Broadway, and pick it up. The We are book solid for my free lecture on How to Survive a Solar Storm workshop on Saturday at noon. And that was with one mention. But I'm going to do a second one behind it at 3 o'clock. The noon is filled. 3 o'clock, you can call 646-926-5422 if you want to join. 646-926-5422. Also, I'm going to... I'll wait till tomorrow to share the rest. Now, let's go over and say hello to Richard and his wife. Hi, Richard. And the I'm sorry, I don't know the wife's name.
Benilda.
Hi. Now, I understand your husband has difficulty talking because he's recovering from a stroke, so you're going to talk for him, correct?
Yes.
Okay, tell us about the stroke your husband had, his condition at the time, and his condition today. What has been the change?
Yeah, Richard had a stroke in 1998, which left him wheelchair-bound in an almost vegetative state with the feeding tube and tracheostomy. He suffered with chronic phlegm and lung infection. He did not move too well and had bouts of depression. And after going to one of your lectures in California and listening to your radio shows, we gradually changed our way of life for the better while we are working with Luann and your protocols. He has less lung congestion or clear the phlegm, and he is moving much more easily. And after that, we found out that he had heavy metals on his body and
in his body
and we finished the protocols to remove them all, and we are starting hyperbaric oxygen therapy again to further improve his brain function. He can pronounce more words better, laughing a lot, and he had a better energy level and all very optimistic signs. And now we have three children that have a vegan diet. And by the way, we refuse to hook up smart meters to our house from our house.
You got rid of the smart meters from your house.
Yeah, we don't have any smart meters.
So would you say that your husband has made a little, major, or substantial improvement?
It's gradually. So there's more, some in the areas like the lung congestion, it's more clear. And his spasticity, he can move a little bit more than way before, because they said he can't move at all, or they're going to have more surgery. But then now we're doing all the protocols. We've been going to the farmer's market every weekend, and mostly our food is
organic.
And
good. Juicing?
Yes.
Good.
We use curcumin for his spasm.
Excellent.
So
he's on the road to recovery in a positive way.
Yes, indeed. We're really grateful that you are here and helping us, and Luann, for giving us all the information and have the positive output in our lives.
I'm glad to hear that your husband's doing well and that your children are vegan and that you're shopping locally, organic, and living a healthier life. We look forward to a full recovery for your husband. Thank you. Okay. Now, we're going to hear right now from a woman who has something to say about this whole greenwashing, and her name is Karuna, K-I-A-R-U-N-A, Jagger, from the Breast Cancer Action, and she's speaking with Abby Martin on Russian TV.
Amidst media fear-mongering about Ebola, a very real threat lurking in this country kills 1,500 people every single day.
cancer. And 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime. So to help combat the horrific trend, October has been designated Breast Cancer Awareness Month, signified by the pink ribbon. You probably already know this, considering every giant corporation and carcinogenic product has donned itself with pink, a trend that many critics have called a pinkwashing marketing ploy that doesn't do much when it comes to combating actual cancer. So to talk more about this, I'm joined by Karuna Jagger, Executive Director of Breast Cancer Action. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me.
So earlier this month, fracking company, this is probably the most absurd example, Baker Hughes partnered with the Susan G. Komen Foundation to produce pink drill bits for the cure. I repeat that, pink drill bits. I mean, aren't there any regulations or guidelines in place that regulate which companies can just slap a pink label on their products?
No, anyone can put a pink ribbon on anything, and they do. And so we have seen pink ribbon handguns, pink ribbon porta potties, pink ribbon toilet paper, from Save the Tatas t-shirts to I Heart Boobies handbags. Pink ribbons are on everything.
That is amazing.
It was from the From the very beginning, the pink ribbon was actually a corporate marketing tool. Few people realized that the original breast cancer ribbon was started by a grassroots activist, Charlotte Haley. She had a salmon-colored ribbon, and she put it on postcards to the NCI, the National Cancer Institute, asking them to put more than 5% of their research funding into prevention, into understanding the root causes of cancer. And Self Magazine and Estee Lauder caught wind of this, and those two marketing giants thought this was a great idea. They asked her to partner up. She said, no, thank you. And so their lawyers advised them they just needed to change the color. Well, they took this ribbon to focus groups, and pink was soft and comforting and soothing and feminine and everything that breast cancer is not. And the pink ribbon was born. And so from its very beginning, pink ribbons really have been a tool of corporate marketers to sell products, nominally in the name of breast cancer, but too often those companies are really using our disease for a public relations stunt, and we have too little to show for it, despite the billions, and it is billions with a B, spent in the name of breast cancer. Still, 40,000 women die of breast cancer each and every year, and that is not acceptable.
It isn't acceptable, and it really is a shame that this billions of dollars that people actually think are going into research probably aren't. I mean, there's probably a very little amount of money, but I guess that's the thing, is there's no regulation, so how can we really track what money and funds are going into that? What's your response, though, to someone who says corporations should be responsible for partnering with medical research groups since they have a lot of money, or that criticizing Komen is counterproductive because any contribution to finding a cure is still a contribution?
Well, there's nothing stopping any company from making a charitable donation. Companies can give to nonprofits anytime they want. What we see with pink ribbon promotions is that companies aren't just giving money, they're actually trying to sell products and drive up their revenues, which they justify through some charitable contribution. And there's been a lot of coverage of the follow the money issue, how much money is really going to a breast cancer organization. Too often we see that no money is going to any breast cancer organization on these pink ribbon products. Oriental Trading, for example, is selling pink plastic bags that say, show you care, be aware. And so consumers are really paying a company for the privilege of carrying around this pink ribbon bag. And again, no money goes to any organization. As far as the question, doesn't any money for breast cancer, you know, isn't that a good thing? It's essentially a question of, doesn't the end justify the means? And I think that when we're talking about toxic products, perfumes with known hormone disruptors, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Yoplait yogurt that was produced with dairy stimulated with the synthetic growth hormone linked to cancer, in each of these cases, encouraging consumers to buy products that contain chemicals that can put us at increased risk of the disease is incredibly hypocritical. And if companies really care about breast cancer, they will make sure that their products and services aren't putting us at increased risk.
Right.
Of the disease.
Now, the whole interview is on our website. Let's just focus on one of those before we go to our next guest. Estrogen. Many of the products that are being promoted are estrogen promoting, and we know that exposure to estrogen plays a critical role in breast cancer. Women whose menstrual periods start when they're relatively young have an increased risk of developing breast cancer, as do women who have late menopause. This suggests that a woman who has a longer exposure to female sex hormones during her lifetime is at greater risk. So what will cause more of this? Well, how about stress, being overweight, and eating animal proteins? Also, there's a major risk factor in imbalancing hormones with alcohol in any amount that increases breast cancer risk. And stress is a major cause of hormonal imbalance. And estrogen and progesterone tend to balance each other out. SXSF estrogen, when you're overweight, you're going to have excess estrogen. When you're on a high-protein diet, which most diets are high-protein, remember the Atkins diet, or reduced progesterone can lead to a condition known as estrogen dominance. And the symptoms of estrogen dominance include water retention, breast swelling, fibrocystic breasts, premenstrual mood swings, and depression, and loss of sex drive, and heavy or irregular periods, uterine fibroids, and estrogen tends to be transformed into two major metabolites in the body, and then they can be called the good and the bad estrogen. If you want the bad estrogen, almost all of the major sponsors are associated with bad estrogen products. It's called 16, and it's an alpha hydroxyestrione, and that favors the development of breast cancer, whereas the 2-hydroxyestrione foods, vegetables, grains, broccoli, cauliflower, cruciferous vegetables, they prevent breast cancer. But you don't see anyone sponsoring research from the money that is raised on how do we get more of the 2-hydroxyestrogen foods in our body, and how do we get rid of the 16-alpha-hydroxy, which promote it, like beef, chicken, veal. All of that promotes it. Dairy promotes breast cancer. And the xenoestrogens also promote it, and poor lymphatic drainage, none of which is being supported. And instead, they support tamoxifen. Well, tamoxifen can cause cancer. It is one of the major sponsors of this. So, in my opinion, until such time that we acknowledge what's really causing cancer and breast cancer in women, and the natural therapies from carnivora, which is Venus flytrap, and Essiac, and cat's claw, and flaxseed, and omega-3 fatty acids, and vitamin C, and their deficiencies produce a more unstable biochemistry, which can lead to cancer, and how natural therapies, natural lifestyle can help it, then to me it's just a fraud. Let's say hello to Greg Pallas now. Greg is a journalist whose news-breaking stories and investigations have appeared on the BBC, The Guardian, and Al Jazeera. And Greg, of course, is known for his many books and his hard-hitting investigative reports, and his latest is the new purge of voters behind this whole effort to get their group elected. And this story broke on Al Jazeera last night, part of one of Greg's longer investigations into how the GOP is making new efforts and strategies to purge likely Democratic voters from the electoral. Nice to have you with us today, Greg.
Glad to be with you, Gary. Yeah, long investigation, 6 months with a team of experts running around the country. And my entire team, Rick Raleigh, the Academy Award-nominated director, filmmaker who shot this. You can catch part two tonight on Al Jazeera America at 9 p.m. But if you go to aljazeera.com, you can get the full story. And it is, in a way, all this work was pretty simple. We have a bunch of Republican secretaries of state, mostly Republicans, who are claiming that there are millions of fraudulent voters in America, people voting twice in two different states. If that's so, that's a monstrous crime wave, because voting twice, Gary, is a crime. You go to jail for 2 to 10 years. Anyone caught, and we catch about one a year, goes to the hooscow. They're claiming 3 million people are illegal voters. And Al Jazeera, I got my hands on the list of the suspects of the 3 million. I got the names of 2 million of the 3 million suspects. And they've been withholding these, saying, well, these are suspects in a criminal investigation, these legions. I got the names, and what it was just a list of common names, like Washington, Rodriguez, Kim Park. They're common names of African-American, Hispanic, and Asian American voters. In fact, they, in the 27 states in this program called CrossCheck, one in eight minority voters is listed as a criminal double voter, subject to loss of their vote.
Hmm. Some of your examples are almost comical on how preposterous this program is, such as elderly people in wheelchairs being charged with voting in two states, separate states. And why isn't our judicial system and courts taking this seriously and undertaking an investigation into the fraud of the cross-check program?
Well, believe it or not, they had the top FBI agent, a guy named Chuck Stuber, is looking into the list. He's supposed to be arresting these double voters. It is a federal crime to vote twice. He's in North Carolina. He has a list of 190,000 suspects. And after 6 months, even though he has their names, addresses, Social Security numbers, phone numbers, you name it, he knows where they are, and they walk in to vote, he hasn't arrested a single one because it's a phony list. It's just a list of common names. They claimed this interstate cross-check group. Again, it's almost it's 24 of the 27 states are Republican-controlled. The secretaries of state running this claim that they're using Social Security numbers. We got the list. No Social Security number matches. Not one. That they use middle names. 1.5 million people have mismatched middle names. Like, I'm just looking around at the list. Kevin Thomas Hayes in Virginia, supposed to be, or in Georgia, supposed to be the same guy as Kevin Antonio Hayes in North Carolina. And I actually met Mr. Hayes. I went to his house. I thought, well, I'll go find him. If the FBI can't find him, I'll go meet him. And it turns out he's never used the middle name Thomas. He's never been to Georgia. And furthermore, it's not that he swears he didn't vote twice because, as his mother said to me with a scowl, he didn't vote once. And the truth is, in the cross-check computers, in this purge list, it actually shows that he didn't vote at all. So they're charging him with double voting when their own records show he didn't vote at all, and they're matching him with a guy from another state with a completely different name.
Greg, in the bigger picture, what is all this in relationship to what we call democracy? As it is, Americans don't take voting very seriously compared to other nations. There are 58 other countries that show better voter turnout than the United States. Australia and Belgium are the highest in developed worlds with about 93% turnout. Australia has strictly enforced laws that require voting. Countries like Uruguay, Uzbekistan, Rwanda, Angola, and other third world countries all have far better rates in the 90 percentile and or high 80s. And our turnout for presidential elections is about 57% and our dismal 38% for congressional and parliamentary turnout. And one of the faults is that we have a two-step voting system, registration and then actually going to the voting booth. We saw corruption in the past with electronic voting. You've exposed that and tampering with the actual votes. And now it is with the registration process. So what is the solution to make voting safe and legitimate? Or is our duopoly system so corrupt now that voting is a meaningless ritual?
I don't think it's meaningless because if we stop voting, they'll be thrilled. As one rap song says, the billionaires don't want you to vote. It's not the solution to everything, but it's what we've got. And in fact, I'm reminded of that because the center of this so-called double voting criminal conspiracy is, believe it or not, the Ebenezer Baptist Church that Dr. King preached at and began the voting rights movement 60 years ago. The Ebenezer Church next to it has an old age home for African-American elderly. According to this interstate cross-check game, 10 of the elderly in that home are criminal double voters. And I actually went up, as I went to the Ebenezer Baptist Church and went upstairs to one of these so-called criminal double voters, and he had a Bible open. He put his hand on the Bible. He says, I swear I have not voted in two states. And he told me, and I saw it, he had a file, a legal sworn signed affidavit, which he sent off to the state of Louisiana, that said, I do not vote in Louisiana. I only vote in Georgia. This is what he had to do to vote. So what they're doing is a mass discouragement of voters. Basically, the voters on this list can get their voting rights back if they sign a postcard. They have to know they got to go through a whole rigmarole. 1 in 8 minority voters is going to have to go through a whole big rigmarole to save their vote. A lot won't do it, And a lot won't even know that they were at risk. They'll get some postcard in the mail, which we've seen looks like junk mail. They'll throw it away and lose their vote. So they do everything they can to make it an obstacle course to vote. It's like, you know, it's kind of the Uncle Wiggly board or something. There's all these treacherous things that you have to go by to get in to vote. You have to have your ID. You have to prove you're not a double voter, you're not a felon. We have something called provisional ballots if they challenge your vote, which is, you know, we had 3 million provisional ballots cast in the last election. They were thrown in the garbage. I mean, so we have a low turnout not because people are lazy. We have a low turnout because they put so many impediments in the way of voting. And, of course, once you have a kind of bleached voter roll, we end up with bleached candidates where you don't feel like you're getting a choice anyway.
Well, Greg, I appreciate, as always, your good, thorough, first-class investigative reporting. And I appreciate Al Jazeera sponsoring you on this, and we look forward to the second part tonight. And it's just one more reason why the entire political system should be changed.
By the way, Gary, I would note that if you go to aljazeera.com, down in the middle of my article, it's pretty long, you'll see a box where you can type in your own name and see if you are listed as one of the double voters. We have a million names from Georgia and Virginia alone. See if you're a double voter, if you voted in this other state according to these characters, which, by the way, puts you at risk.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you. Greg Palast. Now let's go over and say hello to Lou Ann Panessi to wrap up our program today. Hi, Lou Ann.
Hello, Gary. I have an email here from someone named Julian. And Julian says, I was not part of your group at the environmental parade 2 weeks ago, but I was there. I was listening to you talk for 45 minutes. It was very, very inspiring. You gave a message to your listeners joining you, asking as many people as they could to become vegan to help with the environmental movement. And I'd like to ask, how is that going?
We are at the beginning of it, Lou Ann. I'm working with a group of young people, teenagers, and I think the oldest is 20, and to start a worldwide campaign to go vegan to save the planet. And the reason I believe we have to do it is because there is either ignorance or gross hypocrisy or self-servingness amongst almost all the people within the environmental movement. There are a few exceptions. Why is this important? Because you can have all these big, you know, 300,000 marches you want. You could have one every day. It could be 30 million people a day marching. It won't do one single thing to slow down or reverse global warming. But when I see how many of the leaders of the environmental movement are eating meat or chicken or dairy products, or eggs, they're contributing to the deforestation, they're contributing to global warming, and especially so the free range. Here's the irony. Those people who want an organic steak or organic chicken don't realize, organic milk, that you have to have three times the amount of pasture in order to have the grass, to have grass-fed cows. And therefore, you're still creating methane, because what is the biggest cause of ocean degradation and global warming? It is methane, and it is from animals. It is more from animal agriculture than all boats, cars, planes, and trains and ships combined.
Wow.
So when you look at the Animal Agricultural Alliance, and you look at the different National Resource Defense Council, and you look at these groups and you ask them, okay, like Oceana, it sounds good what you're saying, and Bill McKibben, it sounds good, but are you a vegan? Do you promote veganism? Because that's one thing that we as individuals can do, that it doesn't matter what the government does, we're doing it ourselves. And almost all these people will say, well, you know, we support animal rights. Small farmers will say they support animal rights and then kill the animal. They raise it and then they kill it. It's still a dead animal. It's still polluted the environment. It's still contributed to methane gases. The only way that we can do something is become both vegan to address the suffering of animals, to slow down global warming, and also to reverse or prevent heart disease, cancer, and almost all of our pro-inflammatory diseases, including asthma. because these are all based to diet, and the highest point of distress in that diet is animal products. Heterocyclic amines, when they're cooked, cancer-causing agents, and obesity, excess calories. So we can do a lot of good for our personal health, saving $1 trillion a year, saving lives. We can save the environment by going vegan. I'm working with people now in one group, and by next year, we look forward to having our own march, but it will be specific. Veganism. We'll have a book and a documentary to go with it, and we're working on that diligently every day. Thanks for your call.
Okay.
We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Now let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hi, Gary. Today, long past due. No frills, no thrills, democracy.
Excellent. Right back with Utrice Lead.